Hi, I'm David Fettis, and this logic talk is about eight valid forms of inference. And as we get into the various valid forms of inference, I have glad tidings. We are about to escape truth tables. Now, truth tables have value. Truth tables are our only formal method of deciding whether an argument is valid or invalid. Proofs, which we're about to get into, can prove that an argument is valid, but they can't prove the argument to be invalid. So truth tables can do some things that proofs can't. Proofs can only prove that it's valid, but they can't prove that it's invalid. But proofs are much, much more efficient than truth tables are. Take this argument, for instance. R or S entails, T entails K. Second line, not K. Third premise, R or S, and then conclusion is not T. Now, if you want to figure out whether that's a valid argument and make a truth table, you would need 16 rows because there are four different variables. And remember, 2 to the nth power is how many rows you're going to need. So 2 to the fourth power would be 16 rows. If you had an argument with five variables, you need 32 rows. If you had an argument with six variables, you need 64 rows to work through whether the argument was valid. Take this argument that we see here with four variables. You'd have to have 16 rows and a bunch of columns in your truth table and spend some time working it out. This argument can be proved valid with only two additional lines if you know how to do a proof. So a proof can be much, much more efficient than a truth table, especially when a lot of variables are involved. We'll see a little bit later how you can prove this in just a couple of lines, but first, let's get into our eight valid inferences. We're going to see that they have some kind of funny names in some cases. The first is modus ponens, then modus tollens, then hypothetical syllogism, then simplification, conjunction, disjunctive syllogism, addition, and constructive dilemma. Don't those logic people have a way with words? Don't you just love the labels they give to things? Well, sorry about that, but that's what we're stuck with. This is what logic people have labeled these eight forms of inferences, so I pretty much have to use what it's always called by the logic folks. Anyway, these are the eight things that we need to know, and you need to memorize not just these long-winded names for them, but even more importantly, what they mean and kind of get them in your mind so that you can understand the really basic ways of making a valid inference in logic. The first form is modus ponens, which means the way that is affirmative in Latin. That's where this comes from, modus ponens. Anyway, modus ponens takes the form that in the first premise, if P then Q, and your second premise is P, and then your conclusion is therefore Q. Or to put it into a case in English words, if Joey is a poodle, then Joey is a dog. That's your first premise. Joey is a poodle. That's your second premise. Therefore, Joey is a dog. Not terribly complicated. But you see the form that it takes. P entails Q. P, therefore Q. And that's true even if you have more complex propositions. If your premise is A and B, and then you have that entails C, and your next premise is A and B, then you can reach the conclusion C. Your first premise is a conditional, and no matter how long that antecedent is, it could be A and B, it could be a whole bunch of different things, but as long as the antecedent is there in the first premise, and then the second premise just states the antecedent, then you know that the consequent is true. The conclusion is valid. So that's modus ponens. Modus tollens is also taken from a Latin phrase, and that Latin phrase is the way that denies. It uses a negation. So again, you have a premise to begin with, P entails Q, or if P then Q. Your second premise is not Q. If Q isn't true, then you can conclude that P isn't true either, because P entails Q. So if P is true, Q's got to be true. Q's not true, that means P isn't true. If Joey is a poodle, then Joey is a dog. Joey is not a dog. Therefore, Joey is not a poodle. You can't be a poodle without being a dog. And that, again, is a true form, even if you're using complex propositions. So if you say, if C, then E or F. Not E or F. Well, therefore, not C. Your first premise is a conditional, and the second premise is a negated consequent. And so if you have a negated consequent of your conditional, then you know that the antecedent of the conditional is false. P entails Q, not Q, therefore not P. That's how modus ponens works. Now, let's talk about constructing a proof. A proof is a series of statements starting with the premises and ending with the conclusion, where each additional statement after the premises is derived from some previous line of the proof using one of the eight valid forms of inference. So, you start out with a number of premises and you're supposed to prove a conclusion. And what you have to do is go step by step, where every statement that you add is derived from previous statements, and you got your new statement by using one of the eight valid forms of inference. Thus far, we've only looked at two valid forms of inference, but we can already do the proof of that example we saw earlier. R or S entails that T entails K. That's the first premise. Second premise, not K. Third premise, R or S. Conclusion, therefore, not T. And we'll just write the conclusion on the same line as the last premise with the therefore sign. So that's what we want to prove. How do you go about doing that? Well, the first thing you do is you notice that T entails K, because we use modus ponens to get there. How do we do that again? R or S is a premise in the third line, right? But on the first line, we see that R or S entails T or K. And so because R or S is true, and it entails T or K, therefore T entails K is true. That's modus ponens, and you write modus ponens, and then you write lines 1, which was the conditional, and line 3, which was the antecedent. The antecedent means that T entails K, and so you can say that T entails K. Our next step, now that we know that T entails K, we look and we say not T by modus tollens, and we look at lines 2 and 4. Line 2 says not K. Line 4 says T entails K, but remember modus tollens means that if your consequent is negated, K is negated, then T has to be negated. So if you have two premises, not K and T entails K, then you know not T. And that's your conclusion, because that's what you were supposed to prove. Therefore, not T. You've proven in just 2 lines something that would have taken you 16 lines in a truth table. Well, we've seen modus ponens and modus tollens. Let's move on to hypothetical syllogism. Hypothetical syllogism is also called the chain argument, and we'll see why in a moment. Here's how it goes. P entails Q. Q entails R. Therefore, P entails R. Or you could phrase it this way. If P, then Q. If Q, then R. Therefore, if P, then R. Or if you use an English example, if Joey is a poodle, then Joey is a dog. If Joey is a dog, then Joey is an animal. Therefore, if Joey is a poodle, then Joey is an animal. And this is true, again, no matter what form the antecedent or the consequence takes. It can be a complex proposition. So here's a hypothetical syllogism. A or B entails not D. Not D entails C. And therefore, A or B entails C, because the consequent of the first premise is the antecedent of the second premise, and therefore from that you can infer the consequent of the second premise. P entails Q, Q entails R, therefore P entails R. It's also called the chain argument because you can go on adding to it. If P, then Q. If Q, then R. If R, then S. If S, then T. Therefore, if P, P, then T. You see how that works? You're just going if, then, if, then, if, then, if, then. Well, then, if the first item, the first antecedent is true, then the final consequent is true if you have that chain argument. Simplification is another of the eight valid forms of inference. And it is really simple, almost so simple it makes you say, duh, why do they even do that? Your first premise is P and Q, therefore P. You can also say, therefore Q. Basically, all you're saying is that if you have a conjunction of two propositions, then the first proposition can be stated by itself to be true, and the second proposition, Q, can be stated by itself to be true. Joe is smart and speedy. Therefore, Joe is smart. And you could also say, therefore, Joe is speedy. And so it's one of those things where you say, duh, that is so obvious. Why would anybody even say so? But that is really the whole point of logical argumentation, is to take something that's not very obvious, an argument that doesn't seem to be very obvious, and when you work it all out in small, obvious steps, you prove that it's true by a whole bunch of duh statements, by things that taken by themselves are little tiny steps that absolutely have to be true, and then you show that the whole big argument is true by taking it one little step at a time. Now again, simplification, like all the others, can have more complex propositions, but it still holds true. Instead of just P and Q, you can have two complex propositions that are conjunctions. You can have A or B, and not quantity C and D. And then you could say, well, therefore A or B, because it was one side of the conjunction. You could also say, therefore, not quantity C and D, because that's the other side of the conjunction. So if line 1 is a conjunction, then line 2 can infer either one of those two conjuncts. So that's called simplification. We've seen modus ponens, modus tollens, hypothetical syllogism, simplification. Now let's move on to conjunction. And don't confuse this with the logical operator conjunction, although it does involve that. Here's how conjunction works. On the first line, P. The second premise is Q. Therefore, P and Q. Another one of those duh statements. The first premise is P, second premise is Q, and therefore you're entitled to infer the conclusion P and Q is a true statement. Joe is smart. That's your first premise. Joe is speedy. That's your second premise. Therefore, Joe is smart and speedy. Aren't you glad you took logic? You are discovering things you never would have thought of on your own. But that's how this proof kind of logic works. It seeks to help us break things down into very small, simple, obvious steps, and then we can show that more complicated things are true as well. And again, conjunction can involve complex propositions. If A, then B is your first premise. C or D is your second premise. Therefore, if A or B, and C or D. So you have the conjunction of A entails B with C or D. If you assert two propositions, no matter how long-winded or complex those two propositions are, you can also assert the conjunction of those two propositions. Disjunctive syllogism begins with a disjunction, P or Q. The second premise is not P. And then the third is therefore Q. Because in the first line you say P or Q is true, and if one side of that isn't true, you know the other side has to be true. In English, Joe or Jane drives. Joe does not drive. Therefore, Jane drives. And again, using more complex propositions, you could have not A or B and C. Second premise is not A. Now, that's bad grammar to have double negatives, but bad grammar doesn't mean bad logic. Sometimes people in logic use double negatives, not A. So anyway, take my word for it. Not A is okay to say in logic. So anyway, if you're first line is a disjunction of not A with B and C, and your second line is not A, then You can say, therefore, B and C is true. The second part of the disjunct is true because the first part of the disjunct is false. The first premise is a disjunction. The second premise is the negation of the left disjunct in premise one. So if one side of the disjunct is false, the other side has to be true if the disjunct as a whole is true. That's what a disjunctive syllogism is. P or Q, not P, therefore Q. Or you could also phrase it P or Q, not Q, therefore P. It doesn't matter what order those are in. If you have a disjunction and one member of the disjunction is false, the other member of it has to be true. Modus ponens, modus tollens, hypothetical syllogism, simplification, conjunction, disjunctive syllogism, and now just two more. And remember, these are to be memorized. I don't expect you to get them all from just watching this video and have them instantly imprinted on your mind. Study Dr. Van Cleve's article about it. Watch this video a time or two more, but get into your mind what these eight valid forms of inference are. Addition, your first premise is P, and then your conclusion is simply P or Q. In English, Jane drives. Therefore, Joe or Jane drives. You can add anything. Once you know that something is true, you can add the word or, and even if whatever you add is false, the disjunction is going to be true because you know that the first part is true. So anytime you know that P is true, then you can say P or anything else, and the statement P or Q is going to be true simply because you know that P is. And that's true of any complex proposition as well as atomic proposition. So if you say A or B is true, then you can say A or B or not C or D. It has the same form, you see. Line 2 is a disjunction of line 1 and an additional statement. And so if line 1 is true, then line 2 must be true even if the second disjunct is false. It doesn't matter how false it is if the first disjunct is true. And that's why addition works. You say, why would anybody even want to do that? If you have P, why would you want to say P or Q no matter what Q might happen to be? Well, the answer for now is it helps you do proofs. And sometimes it helps you to be able to do this method of addition to prove something. So anytime you have a statement that is true, you can just add the wedge and add any other proposition you want. And the disjunct is always going to be true. That's the method of addition when you're doing logical proofs. And the final one is constructive dilemma, which is a little more complicated than the ones we've been looking at, but it's not terribly complicated. We'll start with an English example. The killer is either in the attic or the basement. If he's in the attic, he is above me. If he's in the basement, he's below me. Therefore, the killer is either blank or blank. How would you finish that? He's either in the attic or the basement. If he's in the attic, he's above me. If he's in the basement, he's below me. Therefore, he's either above me or below me. Wow, that is tremendous logic. He's either above me or below me. But that's the way a constructive dilemma works. You start with a disjunction, P or Q. Then you have two conditionals. P entails R, Q entails S, and then your conclusion is R or S must be true. Take it in English. Joe or Jane will come. If Joe comes, he will bring burgers. If Jane comes, she will bring salad. Therefore, Joe will bring burgers or Jane will bring salad. You know, based on constructive dilemma, that if you have a disjunction and then two consequences with the antecedent of those two conditionals, if you have the antecedent of two conditionals and you know that one of those conditionals is true, P or Q, then you know that one or the other of the consequences is going to be true. So you have these eight valid forms of inference, modus ponens, modus tollens, hypothetical syllogism, simplification, conjunction, disjunctive syllogism, addition, and constructive dilemma. You will need to know them to get anywhere on proofs. to be able to look at some premises and to try to work out what needs to be done. So I encourage you to just watch the video another time. Read the article a couple more times if you learn better by reading than by watching and listening, and get these eight methods of drawing valid inferences into your mind. They will serve you well as you move into your more logical future.